In this episode, I am speaking with Joanne Lipman, who is the author of the book Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work. If you'd like to know the details about what it takes to reinvent in life and work, this is a great book. Joanne details the stories of lots of people who have reinvented themselves and how they did it. Cue the music.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies, listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers, and finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 316 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for a discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. In this episode, I am speaking with Joanne Lipman, who is the author of the book Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work. If you'd like to know the details about what it takes to reinvent in life and work, this is a great book. Joanne details the stories of lots of people who have reinvented themselves and how they did it. Here's Joanne's bio. Joanne Lipman is the best-selling author of Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work, and the number one bestseller, That's What She Said. A pioneering journalist, she has served as editor-in-chief of USA Today, USA Today Network, Condé Nast Portfolio, and the Wall Street Journal's Weekend Journal, leading these organizations to six Pulitzer Prizes. A frequent speaker and television communicator, she is an on-air contributor at CNBC and a journalism lecturer at Yale University. She was also named the inaugural Distinguished Journalism Fellow at Princeton's Institute for Advanced Study, dubbed Star Editor by CNN and Innovator-in-Chief by the New York Times. Lipman began her career as a reporter at the Wall Street Journal, ultimately rising to deputy managing editor, the first woman to attain that post. There she created the Weekend Journal and Personal Journal and supervised coverage that earned three Pulitzer Prizes. She subsequently was founding editor-in-chief of Condé Nast Portfolio and Portfolio.com, which won the National Magazine and Loeb Awards. In 2015, she became the first chief content officer at Gannett. There, she was editor-in-chief of the USA Today and the USA Today Network, encompassing the flagship title plus 109 metro newspapers, including the Detroit Free Press, the Cincinnati Inquirer, and the Arizona Republic. In that role, she oversaw more than 3,000 journalists and led the organization to three Pulitzer Prizes. Lipman is a frequent television commentator seen on ABC, CNN, NBC, CNBC, CBS, MSNBC, and PBS, among others. Her work has appeared in publications including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, Time, Fortune, Newsweek, and Harvard Business Review. She's also the co-author of the critically acclaimed musical memoir, Strings Attached. Another fun fact is Joanne and I went to the same high school in New Jersey. However, I was about 5 years ahead of her. I think you'll find our conversation quite fascinating. This episode is sponsored by the Career Pivot community, but more on that later. Now, on to my discussion with Joanne Lipman. Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I have the real joy of having Joanne Lipman on the podcast, and she is the author of Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be here with you.
I've really liked your book. I like the methodology. I liked all the research you did into it. What got you to write this book and why now?
Well, first of all, for those who haven't read it yet, and I hope you all do read it, Next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work. What it is a deeply reported guide to navigating change in how we live, work, and lead. It's backed by hundreds of personal interviews, plus insights from experts, neuroscientists, psychologists, management theorists, to really put together sort of what is the best process for change. And the reason I wrote it is for this exact moment in time, because so many of us we're still searching for that new normal after the pandemic. But even more than that, what we are in this moment where so many of us are rethinking our careers, we're reprioritizing our lives, we're really reorienting and rethinking what is our relationship to our jobs. And I was inspired to write the book because, like so many people, 3 years ago when the pandemic hit, my life was upended. I had been out on the road. I'm a journalist. I'd been doing a lot of speaking and writing and traveling. And suddenly I'm grounded at home, you know, wondering, like, when is this going to end? And when it ends, what is life going to look like? I am also squarely in the demo of all of your listeners. And I really had that, you know, is this it? Like, what happens from here? And what happened was exactly 3 years ago, I woke up in the middle of the night with an aha moment. This was early on in the pandemic. It was April of 2020, with this realization that this wasn't just about me and my loved ones and my family. This is about all of us. We all were going to have to navigate, what is this new normal? How do we get there? And I realized there's no guidebook to show us the way. And that was my intention. That day, literally, I started reporting next, the power of reinvention in life and work, because we all needed to figure out what's next for us.
Yeah, there's no question. As I've been known to say, we live in weird times.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this pandemic is not over. It's going to hang around and its vestiges will be here for quite a while. And we all have to get used to being, I like to say, uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
or more importantly, living in a world of unpredictability.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I mean, what's interesting is, you know, we're at a point where thankfully the health crisis, the immediate health crisis, is receding. But that sort of more existential crisis of what is our world going to look like and what is our place in it? And where are we going from here? Where do we go next? Like, what's next? And how do I get there? That question is actually even more urgent, I feel, than it ever was before.
So you have a 4 steps you call the reinvention roadmap. Search, struggle, stop, and solution.
Sure. I'll walk you through all 4 stages, and then we can talk about, if you'd like, how some people have gone through it. So the first step, search, is when you are collecting information and experiences that are ultimately going to lead to this transition. The cool thing about this search stage is, for so many people I interviewed, it was unintentional. In other words, maybe they had a hobby or a side hustle or just even a random interest. They never thought of it as something that would become their life's work or that would lead them anywhere. It was just a random interest. So it was unintentional, but they're collecting this information that's going to prove incredibly valuable down the line. Then comes the second stage, which is the struggle. So the struggle is when you're starting to disconnect from your previous identity, but you have not quite figured out where you're going and what that new identity is. The problem with the struggle is it's really uncomfortable. It can be kind of miserable. We don't like to talk about it. And as a result, we very rarely talk about it. So when we tell stories of these great transformations or people who had amazing career transitions, we tend to focus on the beginning and the end, and we skip this whole middle messy struggle part, which, by the way, is incredibly damaging because we all go through it. And because we don't talk about it, when we go through it, it's very lonely. And also, it feels like everybody else is on a glide path to success and only us, like there's something wrong with us, but there's not. There's nothing wrong with you. That's really important. But the struggle, as uncomfortable as it is, often does not end until you reach that third stage, the stop. So the stop may be something that you bring on yourself, like I quit my job. It could also be something imposed on you, like I got fired from my job. It could be for the people I spoke to, sometimes it was an illness or a divorce or a kid going to college, or basically for all of us, a pandemic. It's something that stops you in your tracks. Only then do you get the perspective you need, and all of these thoughts, experiences, struggle, all of it is able to sort of coalesce and lead you to that fourth step, that solution.
Well, let me add to that. Sure. The struggle very often is the one thing that it may take years. And when suddenly you see just the beginning and end, you say, oh, well, he was an overnight success. It just took 10 years.
That's exactly right. I call it the Cinderella myth, and it's incredibly damaging. But if you think about this, Mark, we are brought up with this from birth, right? I mean, it's when you're a baby, it's Cinderella and the frog turning into a prince. By the time you're an adolescence, it's Superman or Spider-Man or Batman. And then you're a grown-up and you turn on the TV and it's American Idol or Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. All of these stories that are part of our culture are about instant transformation. And that's why when we are struggling, and we all do when we're in between this period, we all do. But when we are doing it, we just feel like there's something wrong. Like, this is not the way it's supposed to be. Like, why isn't it like American Idol or Batman or Cinderella, right? Like, it can be debilitating. And this period of time, you know, for some people, it may only be a matter of days, weeks, months. For some people, it can go on for quite a long period of time, can go on for years, even decades in some cases. But it's so important for listeners to understand that if anyone out there is going through this right now, you are not alone. You are not alone. And there's nothing wrong with you. This has been the big revelation since my book Next came out. And it's only been out for a few weeks at this point. But I will tell you, the response to that piece of it, to the idea that we all go through this struggle, and a lot of us are going through it right as we speak, is so powerful. It's validating, because so many of us are going through it and we all feel like we're alone, but we're not.
Yeah, and I'll add to the stop piece. I refer often to that as, I've written several blog posts, I talk about it in my book, moments of clarity. I claim we look at life through filters, and those filters protect us. But then suddenly, like with my bike accident, with some of the other people in your book where they had major calamities, illnesses, or illness of a spouse, James Patterson, I remember the illness of his partner.
Yeah.
Is suddenly you realize what's really important.
It's that sense of perspective. That's exactly right. And it's very hard to have it when you're in the middle of it. When you're in the middle of that struggle, it's very hard to have any perspective, because you're just like in the mud. And you feel, by the way, during that struggle period is when we feel stuck. You often hear people say, I'm stuck, you know, I'm spinning my wheels, right? It feels like you're standing still, but you're not. You're actually making progress. You just can't see it, or you're not conscious of it. That stop is actually what allows you to see. That's where the progress all kind of comes together, coalesces. And that's why I think it's really important. Not everybody will tell you that they had that, goes through that stop phase, but for most of the people that I spoke to, there was that moment of clarity.
I always claim that we are sometimes the worst people who can describe us. Like, I've had people try and write their own brand stories, and most of us suck at it. In fact, I've had brand stories written by the best brand stories have been written by adult daughters. I liked your chapter, Move Before You Move.
Yes.
Because one of my beliefs is inertia is a very dangerous thing. And if I look at my career, and like we talked beforehand, I've had impeccable timing. I think a lot of it has been because it felt like there was the right time to move, and I moved.
That's right. Most of the people who I interviewed, and what you remember when I talked about the search, the first phase, where I said people mostly are doing it unintentionally. Many people who transition, and even things that seem so extreme, their transitions come iteratively, gradually, and they actually were moving before they moved. And some cases, they didn't even realize it. The chapter that you're talking about, one of my favorite characters is a guy named Will Brown. who was an economist at JP Morgan for 30 years, a very intense job in Manhattan and London. And he bought, when his family was young, kids were young, they bought an old farmhouse in upstate New York, just as a weekend house. But Will, over time, over weekends, over the course of actually a few decades, got more and more drawn into farming. And first he leased his property to a local farmer who for cattle grazing. And then when that farmer died, he's like, it's only a few cows, I'll buy the cows. And he suddenly had cows that he owned, and they started learning more and more. Well, fast forward to 30 years, and Will Brown is now a full-time cattle farmer. This is, keep in mind, a guy who was a Harvard-trained economist for 30 years in New York City is now a full-time cattle farmer. And the cool thing about him, when we're talking move before you move, as he said, I never would have said, I'm going to quit my job at the bank so I can be a farmer. He said it was 20 years of weekends of learning more and more and more and getting, you know, absorbing all of this information. He moved well before he moved over a period of time. And I found that that was the case for so many people. The other interesting thing about Will Brown, which I also found for a lot of people, was that when you move before you move like that, where you end up may not be where you plan. And I think this is another real major takeaway from Next, because the business books that we read tend to tell us that you have to have a goal, and then you have to work your way there. You have to work your way every step of the way. You have to plan it. So many of the people I spoke to, that was not the case. And by the way, it's a fine plan if you want to be a doctor, let's say. There, you better take all the steps to get to become a surgeon. But for so many of the people who had these career pivots, it was very unexpected. Will Brown never expected to become a farmer. I interviewed Len Elmore, who's a former Pacers and Knicks NBA star, someone I've known for quite a long time. Actually, I did not know him in his playing years. I've known him since as a fellow parent, but he's now a college professor. He's went back to law school, and he had a career both as a lawyer and a commentator, and he's now a college professor and scholar at Columbia University. Again, not the career that he initially planned on, but all of his interests and experiences led him to this unexpected but really fulfilling destination.
One of the things I tell people is the pathway forward is usually not a straight one.
Definitely. Definitely.
And put this in the show notes. I had Diane Wu David on the podcast about a year and a half ago. She wrote the book Future Proof. Mm-hmm. And she talked about experimenting in your career, mm-hmm. which is doing low-risk side projects to see whether you either liked it.
Exactly.
So essentially what he was doing was he was experimenting with his farming career.
Yes.
Just trying it out and see whether he liked it or not.
That's exactly right. And that is the case for so many people who, you know, people who seem to have really extreme pivots, but in fact, they were fiddling around on the side. They were taking a course. They were taking up a hobby, right? Things that allowed them to, first of all, gain knowledge and gain experience. I think the where we go wrong in some of these stories we tell ourselves is there's this sort of expectation that, you know, if I want to be an astronaut, I should quit my job today and be an astronaut. You know, it doesn't work that way. And it's not a good idea if you don't have the financial resources to quit your job and say, I'm going to go do something else. I mean, you really do want to move before you move. And it's definitely, I highly recommend starting that way.
And again, I had Diane Winger on a podcast some time ago, and she, one of the things she said that has stuck with me is you have to move. You have to get started before you're ready.
Yes. You know, there's a concept that I talk about in the book. It's called possible selves. So the very first step, if you're thinking about transitioning to something really new, is to consciously think about, like, what would that be? Imagine that you as that possible self. That's a psychological term. But what I found is imagining it is just not enough, right? You have to take action. You've got to do something about it. Because if all you do is cogitate about it, and hope that somehow it's going to magically appear, that's not the way it works, right? You must take action. One of the other things you can do in addition to some of the strategies you've talked about is, you know, even writing something down. If you have a goal, if you have a thought about what I would like to be this other kind of, you know, make a transition to this other kind of thing, write about it and share that with someone else. There's a lot of research that shows if you actually write down your goals and then share that with another person, you're far more likely to achieve your goals.
Well, I run a bunch of mastermind groups in my online community for people our age who are trying to make these kind of transitions. And having an accountability person or accountability group, yes, where you show up every week and say, here's what I've accomplished, here's what I've learned. And what everyone discovered is it doesn't always follow the path you think, and it takes longer than you think it will.
Yes, it takes longer and you may end up somewhere else, but generally when you end up somewhere else, it's more fulfilling. But you're touching on something that we have danced around this a little bit in this conversation that I want to bring up, because this is another strategy that I think is so important, and it's called the expert companion. So I have a chapter in Next on what's called post-traumatic growth, which is I looked at people who have been through terrible traumas and were able to not just bounce back, but what we call bounce forward. They were able to, it's not that the trauma was good, but they were able to make something of it and make something positive and grow from the experience. So to do that, trauma psychologists say you need an expert companion. That's what they call a person who can help you, you know, bounce forward. I say we all need an expert companion. And I use that in the sense of you need someone who has an objective view of you and your skills and your talents. And this can be, it could be a coach, right? But it could also be a spouse, a friend, a colleague. And this, what this person can do is an identify in you talents and strengths that you may not even be aware that you have. It's fascinating. We're not great with self-knowledge, honestly. Like we all have skills and talents that are innate to us. And so we tend to either discount them or we don't even recognize them at all because they come so naturally to us that we do not realize that they are special or unique to us. So that expert companion can reflect back to you your strengths, your talents. And in doing so, it also helps you to kind of focus on like, okay, like I can lean into this now, right? It helps you. There, I have a great example. So Danny Meyer, I think a lot of people who know who Danny Meyer is, he's a restaurateur who he created Shake Shack. He's got, you know, a lot of fancy restaurants. And Danny Meyer told me that he was going to go to law school as a young guy. And he said the day before his LSAT exams, he went to dinner with his uncle, who he'd known since he was a baby. And his uncle said, what are you doing? His uncle said, you love to eat. You've loved food since you were a kid. You ought to open a restaurant. And what Danny Meyer said to me, he said, you know, before that moment, it never even occurred to me that that was a possible career. It was just something that was part of my life. I loved it, but never occurred to me that that was a career path. So P.S., never went to law school and is now probably, you know, one of the most successful restaurateurs in the world.
This episode is sponsored by the Career Pivot Membership Community. The Career Pivot Membership Community is a group of people from all over the U.S. and Canada with diverse backgrounds. This is a community where everyone is there to help everyone else out, figure out what they want to do in the second half of life, and then make it happen. Many have made changes that they did not know existed or was possible when they came to the community. They learn from each other and broaden their horizons on what was really possible. Let's hear what Cleo had to say about being part of the community.
I got a lot of support. Just the knowledge that you're not alone. Other people are struggling with the exact same thing, and there are ways to deal with it. There are people, you know, there are people, some really interesting success stories that, you know, maybe that's not exactly what I can or want to do, but it's, and you can see the benefits that people get from different things like that. A couple people that took that positive intelligence course, I could see a real difference in how they acted, felt, and their success after they completed it. And I didn't end up taking the course, but I got the book. I put it as an audiobook on my phone, so I would listen to it while I was at the gym. And I mean, it helped me too, just controlling anxiety, getting back to reality, keeping your mind in a good place. And then there are people that I can reach out to, like if I had something going on, I just felt like I needed to talk to somebody, there were people I could talk that were happy to talk to me. So it's been a positive thing.
You can't just join the community. I bring people into the community every few months in groups. You can sign up for the waiting list, so when I open the door for new members, you'll be notified. If you're interested in learning more about the Endeavor and sign up for the waiting list, please go to careerpivot.com/community. Now, back to the episode. Well, one of the things I've said many times is in every one of my career pivots, which have been many, they've all been what I call half-step career moves. I had one foot in the old world, I had one foot in the new world, and there was always a relationship that took me across.
Yes.
And
point. And
you have a good, you have a section where you talk about weak ties and Mark Granovetter, I believe. Yep. And one of the key, like I'll use this example, when I went off to teach high school math, my most important connector was my chiropractor.
Huh. Love that.
Right. I had been through two life calamities through with her over 15 years, a ruptured disc and my bike accident. And she knew a lot of people. She knew superintendents.
Amazing.
Right. Did I realize that? No. But you have to open yourself up to who can help you. And it's usually not the people who are the closest to you.
That's right. There's a lot of research on this that I cite in Next, and including LinkedIn, which crunched the numbers on its own members and found that the majority of them get jobs from their weak, you know, their extended network, not from their direct network. It makes sense when you think about it, that those who are closest to us, we know the same things, we think the same way, we are aware of the same opportunities, the same people. When you reach out to either weak ties, which are people who you don't know well, so, you know, it's like, I'm interested in Google, I don't know anybody there, but my husband's brother's college roommate worked there, right? Weak tie. Or even better, your dormant ties, people you've lost touch with, a college roommate, somebody you used to work with. When you reach out to those people, they are able to surface fresh ideas and fresh opportunities in a way that your inner circle cannot. It's incredibly powerful. And the one other thing I would add about these weak and dormant ties is when you activate these ties, it's actually psychologically amazing for both you and for the other person. There was a grad student who followed people who just had like kind of weak tie kind of interactions during a day. And they found that those who had the most, and that's like just like chit-chatting with your barista kind of thing, those who had the most were the most kind of psychologically robust and they were the happiest at the end of the day. And when you reach back to those dormant ties, very often there's beautiful research done on these executives who were told, take a business problem, find a dormant tie and see if they can help you solve it. And it was such a gratifying experiment because not only did they get better advice, but it was economical in terms of time because they could pick up where they started. But it was also really gratifying because very often it was maybe somebody who had been a mentor, right? Somebody who you can say thank you to. There's nothing more powerful than that kind of gratitude, both for you and for the person who's receiving it.
The last chapter I want to talk about is stop what you're doing. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up. So one of the most important things we can do is take a break. We are way too hard on ourselves. We are in this culture where you just want to keep focusing harder, 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 harder. And if I can't get there, I better just keep staring at my computer screen. And it's absolutely the worst thing that we can do. So there's a boatload of research on this, and I pulled together a ton of it for this chapter. And it's everything from taking breaks during your work day, take a walk in nature isn't particularly good, go exercise, et cetera, Two, taking extended breaks. I mean, weekends are important, nights are important. There's research on college professors when they take a sabbatical that they come back with actually fresher research ideas. When CEOs, there were nonprofit CEOs who were able to take a sabbatical, they came back and were able to restructure their organizations and refresh their organizations. And it's part of that. There's a reason why stop is part of my reinvention roadmap, because you need that stop in order for you to really, for all of the stuff swimming around in your head, to kind of have a chance to coalesce. And there's a reason I have a chapter, a related chapter on aha moments and how you can have more of them. And I talked to these neuroscientists, fascinating research. They study creativity. And you need to take a break. There's a reason why you will get your big brainstorm when you're sleeping or exercising or showering. Aaron Sorkin, the screenwriter, supposedly takes like 7 showers a day. Because what you need to do is to turn off the executive function of your brain that is corralling and keeping all your thoughts in line. That just needs to get shut off. So all those thoughts can play with each other while in your subconscious and come together in unique, novel ways. And that's what leads to your breakthroughs and your aha moments.
Yeah, when I read that, there were two particular books that came to mind. One, Susan Cain's book, Quiet.
Yeah.
She's got a chapter in there on restorative niches.
Mm-hmm.
And that is learn to find out where you get your energy from. So I very often, for me, it's being outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I very often take most of my phone calls up on my rooftop mirador. Yet you need time to restore.
Right.
So I am a big time introvert, yet no one would ever know that.
Likewise, me too.
Right. Yeah. I turned in my career, I was a geek that could speak. And
I'm a geek.
The one thing that I learned was if I got on stage or I did a training, I had to take breaks during the day and just walk outside, give myself permission to take a break.
That's such an important thing. What you just said, you have to give yourself permission. Very often and too often, we feel guilty if we take that downtime, but we need the downtime. You need the downtime in order to do better. I mean, there's a reason why Next, this book, emerged when I was sleeping. I'm not kidding. I literally had an aha moment, woke up in the middle of the night. I could have stared at a piece of paper or a computer screen for a month and not come up with the idea. And I'm so thrilled that I did. But it was almost like I didn't take ownership of my own idea because it just appeared.
Joanne, after someone reads this book, what do you want them to do?
So two things. One is how I want them to feel. And the other is one thing that they can do. Read the book. There's a dozen strategies that are going to get you through some of them we've touched on about possible selves and expert companion, but there's a dozen and taking a break. But there's a dozen of these strategies that are very, very user-friendly that are in the back of the book. Once you read the book, you'll see there's great stories that show you how to put this into place. So you can certainly do that. At the end of the book, my hope is that you will feel empowered and also feel optimistic, because I really do feel like there's a lot of us who are feeling unmoored and are feeling that it's only us and that there's something wrong with us and that we're feeling alone. And I think you'll read this book and you'll realize that you're not alone. There's nothing wrong with you. And you really are making progress to whatever that goal is. Even if you're not sure what that goal is, you are on your way. You're further along than you think. I think it's a really important message from the book. And if I were to say like one action, we touched on this, but I will say this. I would say something you can do right this second today, right now, is when you're done listening to this podcast, is reach out to a dormant tie. I would reach out to somebody who you would like to say thank you to, somebody who's helped you along the way, who, you know, you just hadn't talked to in a while, just to let them know. I have to tell you, I got an email like this the other day from a woman who I used to work with, a journalist who I used to work with, and it was just an out of the blue email saying, you know, I was just thinking about you because you really gave me so much help and support at this particular moment, you know, 12 years ago. I was like, I was blown away. I cried when I read the email. I was walking on air for the rest of the day. And, you know, the person who sent the email, I think, probably felt at least as good. So, and not only that, you then connect with that Dorman tie who knows, could lead to whatever your next opportunity is.
Well, it's funny, right before this call, I had a Zoom call with a woman who was in career crisis 6 or 7 years ago. And she reached out to me and she told me where she's working. And I went, oh, yeah, I know people there and it's not good. And she then quickly left and went on to something better. But she still remembers that.
Right, of course, right? It's incredible, like that kind of dormant tie. So you were able to give her some really helpful advice. It's amazing. And then, you know, it's like I said, there's no downside here. People are always happier than you would imagine to hear from you, and it could lead to other opportunities that you may not even be aware of right now.
So Joanne, this has been great. If someone wanted to reach out and contact you, and more importantly, buy your book, how might they do that?
Sure. So next, The Power of Reinvention in Life and Work. You can buy it anywhere on Amazon, your local bookstore. I always like to encourage people to go to their independent local bookstores because we like to support them. And to reach me, and you can contact me through my website. And if you wanted to reach me or interested in having me come and speak with your organization, you can do it all through my website, which is joannelippman.com.
And we will put all of that in the show notes.
Terrific.
So, Joanne, thank you very much for being on the Repurpose Your Career podcast.
It was a great conversation, Mark. Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I really enjoyed Joanne's book and found it extremely comprehensive in approaching this topic. Take a moment, go to careerpivot.com and sign up for the weekly Career Pivot Insights newsletter, which is sent out every Sunday. You'll get a weekly update to this podcast, white papers, and new blog posts. When you subscribe, you will receive my latest white paper, Ageism, The Last Acceptable Bias. While there, do not forget to check out the Career Pivot community, which can be found at careerpivot.com/community. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Look for Career Pivot on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode 316. You can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and lots of other places where podcasts can be found. In fact, this podcast can be found on the Repurpose Your Career podcast channel on YouTube. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.